This is Fried Brain Productions.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Welcome to Armchair Producers, episode 3. And joining me, George Tarrant, today is the ever-present Mr. Travis Croft. How are you, sir?
I'm very good, and welcome to this week's Hootenanny.
Hold down,
Hootenanny, out here in Fried Brain Studios.
Yes.
In the country.
Yeah, we going down country.
We got both kinds country. Out here, country mm-hmm. and western.
Mm-hmm.
And we eat a lot of peaches
mm-hmm.
in the country. Then we'll put there.
Without any jams.
By a man in a factory downtown for all those President's fans. What have you been up to this week? You have been very naughty, I must say, this week, because people who are regular listeners may be tuning in to expect a review or a view on the Stephen King film It. I went and saw this on Friday night, but unfortunately, I'm the only one.
I had plans to, but then I didn't. I'm not even going to lie. I fully intend on seeing it, and I'm seeing it tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
So please, no spoilers. But you can always give
spoilers. I mean,
spoiler free. I mean, is it good?
Look. We might as well jump straight into my
thoughts. Why not?
I
yeah,
we can go to maybe some more detail next week. To say that I don't think I can give you spoilers because you saw the one. You've seen it. Yeah, you've seen the
This one,
TV show, right?
Yes. This one is basically all the kids element of it. Though,
yeah,
isn't
it's not. There are some small differences in the sense that you're right. I mean, we don't in the original 1990 version of It, which fucked me up. Like, that TV show, especially, I remember it was a mini-series, actually, here in Australia, at least.
It was
shown over
UK.
3 nights.
Yeah.
Like, that first episode was, like, the scariest thing I think I'd ever seen on television before.
I can't remember the order of how everything happens. Is it? Cause
it starts with, obviously, the death of Georgie.
That's right,
which
yes.
is when he gets killed in a drain by Pennywise. And then we have them as the first half of the original miniseries is them as children encountering it, fighting it in the sewers, and then thinking it's defeated. Where the second half, spoilers, guys. I mean, seriously, it's been 27 years since it came out. The book's been out for over 30 years, so fuck you.
For some reason, I thought it didn't play linear. I thought it kind of jumped between them as adults and them as kids. Maybe I just watched it weird.
It's been a long time since I've seen it. It's probably on YouTube somewhere.
Yeah.
But I recall they come back later as adults and have to kill it again because they didn't kill it properly the first
time. Right,
This is battery acid, you slime!
Pretty much, yeah. And so considering you never killed an interdimensional space... whatever, spider or whatever it was. I can't remember. I read the book a long time ago.
It's a spider-ish thing.
It turned into a spider at the end.
Yes.
So, but you can be forgiven for not killing it the first time. It's just a long way of saying that the details of his story aren't unknown. Many of our generation, at least, might remember the TV show from the 90s.
I mean, there's a kind of formative TV and cinema experience is... idea or the memory. For those of you who can hear the lapping in the background, that's probably Riley just having a good old drink and hopefully
maybe
not just licking the balls.
Is complete without Riley providing
we
some
need
background
noise. What can I say?
Makes it sound like there's something going on in our lives.
Yeah. we're actually recording this in the local brothel.
He's a brothel in Kinglake. Shame.
There may very well be. How do you think I pay for everything?
Don't mention a war.
Yeah. Formative years of Tim Curry as Pennywise.
It's one of the most terrifying cinematic...
Yeah.
Or TV portrayals.
It's brilliantly manic and terrifying at the same time. Fantastic.
And probably, I think, the only thing that really holds up from that show, when you look at it now,
I've
gone back and... I mean, I haven't watched it in a while, but I'm sure I've seen bits of it at least over the last 5 years. And you go back and you look at it, again, like it's on YouTube somewhere, and you go... Yeah, the acting's a bit cheesy. The effects are cheesy. TV movie standard effects have pulled all their punches because it was made for TV.
Yeah.
And you can't really get too violent or gruesome in those sorts of situations. So, it's okay, but it probably doesn't quite stand up to
the test of time.
It's aged poorly.
Yeah.
So, the new film does look a lot better. I mean, one might expect for a film made almost three decades later.
You'd certainly hope so.
The special effects, obviously, are significantly improved, but they've obviously got themselves an R rating for this film, so we can show a lot more, with a lot more gore, a lot more violence, a lot more horror.
Yeah.
This is a horror film.
Good.
And, you know, King books tend to be, more often than not, considered horror films, so... Like, there are bits where you go, oh, they pulled their punch hardcore in a TV show in that one, but not in the movie.
Okay.
And the acting is wonderful, much, much, much better, I'd suggest, than the TV show. So we've got a fine young cast of children actors, including one of the kids from Stranger Things.
I can't remember his name. I'll have a look.
One of the kids, anyway. You'll recognize him straight away if you saw Stranger Things, because he plays Richie, who, of course, is the sort of a budding comedian
who was previously played by Seth Green.
Was it Seth Green?
It was Seth Green in the TV version.
So he's great. And of course, is it Bill Skarsgård?
Yes,
he's playing Stellan's son, I think.
I think so. He's one of the brood.
I was going to say, there are far too many Skarsgårds.
Yeah, there really are.
It's such an unusual name. You've got Stellan, Bill, and there's
Alexander.
Alexander, and I don't even know if he's related to the other two.
I don't know. Possibly.
Possibly. It's but Bill plays a wonderful new interpretation of Pennywise. So without giving too much away there, he's good. The acting's good. It looks good. I will say two things on this, because we don't have a whole lot else to say this week. I never thought I would say this about this film. Because if you've seen the book, have you read the book?
I have seen the book, definitely.
It's huge.
Yes.
This is
massive.
This is not one of those Stephen King novellas like The Body, which they based Stand By Me.
Rita Hayworth and The Short Redemption.
It's not one of those novellas.
Mm.
This is a full-on King novel, so it's chunky, it's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I think we might have even talked about this when we heard they were making it was that how are they going to cram all of that into a film? Or at the very least, more accurately, how are they going to take the good stuff and put that into the film and translate it without losing the essence and all the other cool stuff that came in the book? This film's a bit long.
Okay.
I think it could have been shorter.
Okay.
So I'm like, that's a really weird thing to think when you've got a giant, huge, chunky novel which has been turned into a 2-hour...
And there's still another half of that story to tell.
And there probably were a few bits where you're like, yeah, okay.
Okay.
Get moving. Come on. Get to the point. Come on, guys. Get to the point. I know what's coming. Maybe that's it. It's because I know what's coming.
Yeah.
The two teenagers next to me who talked and checked their phones all the way through the film seemed far more scared, shocked, appalled at the end of the picture and when the crazy shit happens.
Okay.
The only thing I'd say was going through my head while I was watching this, and it was maybe prompted by the fact that the young actor from Stranger Things was in
Finn Wolfhard.
I would suggest he's one of those guys who will have a career.
Okay.
Not always the case.
Mm.
Every now and again, there's a Jonathan Brandis.
Yeah.
You think to yourself, you know, he'll be a star one day, and and you read about them 25 years later when they've hung themselves. Sorry, that's really fucking dark.
Really dark.
Fast, but
moving on.
I think a show like Stranger Things has really prepared the ground for this movie. Like, I think it should be sending a bouquet, a fruit basket or something to the two brothers who made...
Duffer Brothers
who made Stranger Things, who actually volunteered to make it, apparently, but they were nobodies at the time, and not anymore.
Yeah.
They should be sending a fruit basket to the Duffer Brothers, because having Stranger Things having come out a year ago, and having it's a pure homage to King. The whole thing is an homage to King. Even though he didn't actually write any of it,
but just the themes, the way the story unfolds,
even the title looks like something you'd see in a King book.
It's Stephen King meets John Carpenter.
It's perfect. Yeah, it's a love letter to King, and that has really led. It's also being set in the '80s has also that huge '80s nostalgia sort of come in at the same time, because it really nailed that so well. So here we have an actual King film set in the '80s that's trying to sort of tread very similar ground. A TV show Stranger Things, I think, has actually really prepared us for this thing, for this film. And the fact that we're not getting a season two for another, a month or so.
I think it comes out
around about Halloween.
A month and a half from now? Something the end like of October?
So, usually it's around Halloween.
Yeah.
So, I think this is actually feeding into the appetite that was built by Stranger Things, which is a strange thing that the fact that it has no direct connection with this film or this author or anything. It's done very, very well in the States. I think it's had the second highest ever rating for an R-rated film.
Yeah, I think so.
Just behind one of the shitty Paranormal Activity films.
Yeah.
It's going to do extraordinarily well, this film.
It's going to be popular. It's going to keep going as well, I think. It's going to go through until Halloween.
It's not just the fact that, it's a famous story. Everybody remembers the TV show and the book. But the word of mouth is going to spread that this film's actually a Stephen King film. And it's actually pretty fucking good for a change. Unlike The Dark Tower, apparently. So, the fact it's had a huge opening, I think, is a huge tick.
It's a good sign.
For it. And look, it's a quality production. Yeah.
They've already apparently started wrapping up for the sequel, which makes complete sense.
Well, I mean, at the end it just says the end of chapter one, and two girls next to me just groan and go, "Oh, we're not coming to see that. Too scary," or something. I'm like, again, I was. If I have a criticism, it's not a criticism of the film. It's just the fact that I know the story so well. I'm like, hang on, but there's a whole bit where they come back as adults and do it again, you know? And, like, they're not going to... Oh, okay, sequel. And, so it was like, you know, no surprise or shock for me.
And, I mean, just the way that you said that this movie, which only deals with half of it, you felt it was a little long. It's kind of... It's good that they broke it into, because if they had smashed it all together, it would have been a flickbook of, remember this, remember this, remember this, remember this, the end. Like the first two Harry Potter books, movies. I mean, the obvious age difference between the generations of when they encounter Pennywise, that's kind of an obvious breaking point to say, okay, we're going to double our money with this by making two movies.
Absolutely. And one of the key parts of this film, I think, is a success, is you get to know the characters a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
We don't spend a whole lot of time on character development, but what they do well.
Yeah. Yeah.
And some of them don't get as much as others, but at the same time, if we had to start with these kids as kids, and then by the end of the film have them as adults and have sorted the whole fucking story out in two and a bit hours, you would have had no time to get to know anybody or care about them.
Yeah.
So as it is, we know these characters now, and when they're recast as adults, we will continue to care about them and care about their fate. It's quality. It's good stuff. And take your girlfriend along.
Yeah.
Put your arm around her. Hopefully she'll bury her head in your shoulder a few times. It's going to be a good date movie, I think. It'll be a good date movie for that reason, if nothing else. But I was quite surprised to see a number of very young children. Young enough I had to get the booster cushions.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Out. And I'm like...
It's like, I saw this as a child, you're going to see it too.
You might as well mess your child up early. You've got to do it at some point. Do it now.
Well, I saw on Facebook that somewhere in Japan, people have started doing the practical joke of having someone dressed up as Georgie going up to people and asking, oh, my little boat.
Yes, I posted that today.
Oh, that was you, yeah.
It wasn't. It was somewhere in South America or Mexico. Okay, I think it was something
bloody terrifying.
It was, and they had the guy jump out of it as Pennywise. Yeah. It was. Look, I'm a big respect of my. I mean, that was really the challenge here in a sense. It was a little bit like The Dark Knight when everybody announced that they were recasting the Joker.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, sorry, Nicholson's the Joker.
Yeah.
You know, maybe there was a tiny minority who thought Cesar Romero or whatever from the TV show. But everyone of the younger generation, well, we've seen the Joker, we know the Joker. Jack Nicholson did it perfectly. You can't do it again. It's been done.
Mm-hmm.
And then we saw Ledger. And you're like, oh, okay, I was wrong. He fucking nailed that. We've talked about this lots before.
Yes.
Tim Curry, iconic performance as Pennywise. You're like, sorry, why would you recast that role? No one could do it better. I wouldn't go so far as to say Bill Skarsgård's pulled a Heath Ledger here.
Yeah.
But he's certainly done a laudable job. And I would suspect if one were in the United States this Halloween, there will be many, many Pennywises out on the streets.
Like last year, it was owned by Harley Quinn's. This year, it'll be Pennywise.
I think this one might be a little bit harder to pull off with the face makeup. Unless you get a
Okay. Well, you've got at least two different variations that you could go for, and you could. It's, there's probably going to be someone who tries to do a sexy Pennywise. Which is going to be really weird.
Yeah, that's true. I've seen people do some sexy, pretty much anything.
Yeah.
I saw someone do a sexy Stormtrooper on Facebook the other day, and you're like,
yeah.
Yeah, I didn't ever saw that coming, but.
Yep.
Okay, that's interesting.
Like, that's out there now.
While we're on, we'll move off King for now and say I would recommend seeing this film if you get a chance.
Mm-hmm.
We will hear your thoughts next week.
Yes. I would like to talk a little bit
can
about...
Can I take you one second? Because I was on the topic.
Mm.
There's been talk of another Joker film. Another Joker film that will not star Jared Leto, but will be an origin Joker story, which will be a different actor again portraying a younger version, I guess, of a Joker.
Yeah, executive produced by Martin Scorsese.
And the talk is going to be DiCaprio.
Directed by Todd Haynes. Who did
the Hangover
movies? Yeah, they're trying to get Scorsese as the bait to get DiCaprio. Apparently, I am not going to pay any attention to this until it actually happens.
Right.
Because there's so many fucking DC comic movie adaptations out there. So like, oh yeah, we're going to do this, and this. Like, I don't see that happening. They've got one certified hit on their hands. And now they're kind of going, all right, we've got it down. We are going to do everything. We're going to do all this. I'm like, slow down. Maybe get three. You know, at least get Justice League out. And if people like it, then really seriously start moving forwards with it. But this one is going to be, oh no, they're back to their old habits. Or is it like, nah, this proves that Schneider was fucking awful. Because he did the first, second, and the fourth. And all of those ones fucking awful, rah, 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 rah. In which case, if Justice League comes out and it is shit, at least they can say, yeah, well, we're destroying continuity, we've got all these directors coming in, they've done their own versions, we're just going to have cool stories about these funky, cool characters. They can crossbreed if they want to, we're not being sticklers with that, we're not doing the Marvel route, which would be cool.
It would be an interesting way to go.
Yeah.
They would differentiate them from their competition.
Yes.
But that said, Marvel has got a brick wall coming very, very fast. At the end of Infinity Wars, I'm sure someone somewhere has a plan, but I'll be curious to hear what it is.
Are you referring to sort of people aging out of roles?
Well, Downey Jr. will probably not do Iron Man again outside of the Infinity Wars. It won't be an Iron Man 4, I don't think.
Well, he did put up an Instagram thing saying, just a sign saying, I'm there for Sherlock Holmes 3,
yeah.
And considering Sherlock Holmes 2 was a disappointment, and Iron Man 3 was a very good film,
A lot of people didn't like Iron Man 3.
I know, I don't understand why. I think a lot of it has to do with the Mandarin shit, but...
I was like, for example, I was with some friends recently, and we were watching The Nice Guys again.
Such a great film. So good.
So good. We don't need another Lethal Weapon film. We've already got it.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, this is David Gunn guy. He directed Iron Man 3. And I was greeted with a chorus of, ugh.
Yeah.
And I hated that one. And you're like, really? I thought it was pretty good. But, look.
They've already got a solution to that. Tom Holland, young Spider-Man.
So he'll be the standard bearer.
He's going to be the standard bearer going forward.
It'd be interesting though. Would you? Like, you've got obviously they've got an incredibly valuable property there now. In, I mean, Iron Man probably.
Mm-hmm.
Will Chris, Chris Evans come back for another Captain America film? What is it? Another 2 or 3 years from now, when Infinity Wars is finished and out and done. So in 3 years' time, will Chris Evans and Mark Ruffalo and Chris Hemsworth want to continue to be playing for will this generation
Also got the get out of jail free card of the Infinity Gauntlet itself. They can rewrite reality and they can bring in all the different universes. They're like, oh yeah, we're gonna suddenly do a female Iron Man.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Like,
do
you,
the Hydra version of Captain America.
I wonder what would happen if I wonder if that's what they'll do, if they'll go back to the drawing board and go, we hit the reset button because this particular MacGuffin happened, and all of a sudden we go back to the start with a new Iron Man. A question for you, off the cuff question, we have not rehearsed this.
Okay.
If there was one comic book story or one comic book character yet to be actually turned into a film,
mm-hmm.
I think you said it was Plastic Man in the past.
That's the
is
one
it
that
still Plastic Man?
I still fucking want Plastic Man. I was talking to someone else about it the other day, and I really want to make that Plastic Man because it would be fucking awesome and it would fit in with everything, whether it's the comics, whether it's the movies. It would fit in nicely with all of it, but be its own origin story. It'd be fucking amazing. Let me do it. Dan Ditko, John Jones, hit me up. Brain on Twitter.
My choice, and I can't remember, you might know the name of this better than me, but there was a particular Superman story or a version of Superman.
Where it goes to Russia?
It goes to Russia.
Red Sun.
Red Sun.
That's apparently in consideration for one of these spin-off DC,
that
not part of it.
That would be maybe. Fucking cool.
Yeah.
Soviet Superman.
Yeah.
That or Banana Man, one of the other.
Banana Man, ooh, who would you cast as Banana Man? Because he's got the similar problem that Shazam has got, where he's a kid, but he becomes an adult.
Will Arnett?
Banana Man. That'd be
No. He's kind of a buff guy. He's kind of a big. He's English. So, was it Nick Stone?
You mean Nick Frost?
Nick Frost, sorry. Nick Frost from the...
Okay, Banana Man does not have a beer belly.
He can go at the gym for a while.
Banana Man, the elder years. This banana's got a little too ripe.
I don't know if you've noticed, but on Amazon soon we've got a new live action version of a tick.
Yes.
It should be kind of cool with the guy from Seinfeld.
Seinfeld?
Is that the guy did he play?
You mean the lead?
Yeah, wasn't he on Seinfeld?
I don't think he was. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy. He's
Dwayne Benzie
in Space. Peter Schwabakovsky.
Peter Serafino?
That's the one. Yeah.
I was thinking of the guy,
Larry David.
not Larry David.
Oh my god, Larry David is the tick.
Oh, I can never remember his name. He used to play Putty in Seinfeld. He also voices.
I have never watched a single episode of Seinfeld.
What? How can this be allowed to continue?
Well,
it was voted the greatest sitcom of the 20th century.
Well, see, I've just been seeing a trending hashtag of #, Friends was better. I don't know
nobody,
if I believe that because I cannot
comment. Nobody who matters believes that. Patrick Warburton.
He was the previous, because there was another version of the tick, and he was the tick.
Okay, maybe I was wrong. That's
where you're getting from. Yeah.
It's Banana Man or Red Sun would be kind of cool, but I mean, as you sort of say, you're in a world now where everything seems to make, all these movies continue to make money.
Yeah.
There's going to be an increasing appetite to dig deeper into the back catalogue.
Yeah.
Find out.
The one that gets me really excited, Greg Miller of Kind of Funny, he has got an idea for Kingdom Come, which is kind of all the superheroes much older, and it gets Michael Keaton back as Batman, as an old Batman. It's like, oh my god, yes, please, that'd be fucking awesome.
That would be cool.
So, yeah.
One thing that does surprise me, and maybe you've heard something that I haven't, is why, if they want to make another Joker film, they want to make a Joker-only film, why the fuck aren't they making The Killing Joke?
Because they did that as an animated movie.
I know, but nobody saw that.
I did, and it was... They changed it, and they fucked it up. I was like, no, DC animated movies are always good. That's the rule. This one is a classic art by Dave Gibbons, story by Alan Moore. It's gold. Nope. They went, nah, we can do better than these greats of the industry. Nah.
Well, there you go. There's no reason why they couldn't do it live action. I know they did it so that Hamill would voice the Joker one more time and stuff like that. But I mean, obviously, it's the gold standard in Joker stories, and it would actually very nicely lead into some of the future Batman films if they involve, you know, Batgirl and what's her name, Oracle. So anyway, but that's not what they're doing. Apparently, they want to go back to tell an origin story where the Joker got bullied in school or something.
Well, I mean, it could work if it's sort of like it's a Joker story in only that the last thing you see is him becoming the Joker, like him kind of choosing to wear a purple coat or something like that, and it's more of a serious thriller or drama of his life just psychologically being ripped apart, and just showing him going from a semi-stable guy to someone where it explains why he is chaos incarnate.
Is there an involved dropping him in a vat of acid?
I could. Why not?
Is there a comic book precedent here?
Of the origin? Killing Joke is the closest.
But he's already the Joker in that, isn't he, essentially?
Because you always... you get the backstory of him, and he was like a failed stand-up comic, and really put upon husband, and just... It's basically what they should do with this Joker origin of a poor guy who's just putting pressure and pressure and pressure and pressure and snapping, kind of falling down, but a Joker.
Yeah, I bet. I like that.
That could work.
Wait, can we get Michael Douglas back?
Yo, him as a Joker? He's too old. He's too old now.
And you're going to bring up something before he really interrupted you.
How dare you continue your conversation and not let me interrupt you. So, you were talking about it. I decided to go on a little bit of a horror binge as well. I watched the 2010 version of A Nightmare on Elm Street, because why not? And then I thought, you know what? It has been probably 15, 20 years since I last saw the original.
The original's a classic.
So I went back to watch it. It's awful.
Really?
I only got about 36 minutes into it. Maybe not even that. I didn't even get to Johnny Depp's death. And it was really bad. It's really bad. And I know that obviously the visuals and everything like that are dated, and everything about it is dated, but it is not good. And I tried looking back on it and thinking, okay, this is one of the ones that started it all. Let's try and reassess it. No, still not good. It's still not good. I just couldn't get through it. I watched all of the remake, and they tried to almost humanize Freddy Krueger, played by Jackie Earle Haley, which, good choice to play a new version of Freddy Krueger. But they tried to humanize a pedophile. Quite an uphill struggle, and Samuel Bayer.
I have seen that done.
Is that Hard Candy?
No, but that's very good.
That's a very good
film. There's a German film I saw at MIFF a few years ago called Michael, which last check actually was on Netflix.
Oh.
But it, yeah, oh, I don't know.
Not to be confused with the...
But the John Travolta film? No, no.
Well, maybe not.
it's a fly on a wall style film about a guy who locks children in his basement. And he's a horrible, horrible human being. But at the same time, the focus is on... imagine if you made a film about Buffalo Bill and not Hannibal
from
Lecter.
Buffalo Bill's point of view.
From Buffalo Bill's point of view, he just goes down to the shops and he buys some Fred.
Okay.
You know, and like he goes out for lunch, you know, and then he goes to work. And then he comes home at the end of the night and then he throws the lotion down the well. You know, that's the kind of film it was.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Interesting.
It was fucking brilliant, by the way. If you find it, see it if you have the constitution, because it's not an easy watch. But yeah. Nightmare on Elm Street 2010, good. Nightmare on Elm Street 1980.
No, Nightmare on 2010 is okay.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got a lot of famous faces in it. Obviously, Jackie Earle Haley, a young Rooney Mara, Carl Gollner, who some people might know, he played a version of The Flash in Smallville, and he's popped around a few places. Katie Cassidy has recently been on Arrow. Thomas Decker was in Sarah Connor Chronicles, and he was in season one of Heroes. Clancy Brown, Connie Britton. So
none of these people's names mean anything to me.
Connie Britton, you know Clancy Brown.
Highlander.
He was the Kurgan.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Connie Britton was the wife in the first season of American Horror Story.
Okay, I almost got through that.
Oh, I really like that.
Although I didn't dislike it. It was just
the last couple of seasons.
Just didn't set my world on fire the way it did everybody else's. It was okay, but I would never know her face then because she's in lots of stuff.
Yes,
she's like a bit like someone asked her. I was just talking this. One of my favorite trivia questions is who was the first actor to play Hannibal Lecter? And of course, the answer is Brian Cox. And I'm like, Brian Cox. Like, who the hell is that? And I'm like, Google him. You will know his face instantly because maybe he's not as well known as some other actors, but that is in. Heaps of stuff.
Yes.
So, Okay, so did you go any further down the rabbit hole?
I took a little bit of a right turn, and I decided a different kind of filmic horror. I watched Terminator, Transformers, Age of Extinction.
Which one is that one?
That's the one, not the most recent one that came out this year, that's the one before.
Is that four?
So that's number four, yes. And this one was the one that introduced the Dinobots, and had Mark Wahlberg as a garage scientist. And it gives an excuse... It explains the Romeo and Juliet law, where someone who's under the age of 18 can legally date someone who's over the age of 20 or something like that and have a relationship, as long as they have a pre-existing relationship where they were both underage. And it's like, why would you put that in a movie? What? This whole movie is... It's atrocious.
Wow,
so bad.
No,
I wasn't expecting anything. For some reason, I've just had niggling over the last few months that bizarre urge to watch the Transformers movies. And
you should see a doctor about that.
Yeah, I think I might have a lobotomy.
They might have an ointment or something.
Yeah. but that was pretty terrible.
It was at any level of, I mean, these films were obviously tremendously successful.
Mm.
That one in particular. Now that
well, the just... reason why that one was particularly successful is because it was one of the first real ones that you could see that they were directing it at the Asian audience, particularly China, and they just because they stopped the movie halfway through and transplanted it to China because it's a fucking huge industry over there, and
it's the third biggest market.
It's the second biggest, and it's just catching up.
That was one of the real death knells of Ghostbusters. It was banned in China because they don't like the supernatural themes. And
mm-hmm.
I mean, aside from the fact it sucked, it could still well have made its money back.
Yeah,
and you know, I have to say, thank you, China.
Yes, thank you. We appreciate everything.
We could be looking at another one if
we've
made enough money in China.
Yeah.
But then we remember Independence Day 2.
Yep.
Had a very strong a number of the characters were actual Chinese.
Yes, there's a lot of representation, like Chinese brands, Chinese actors,
and there was a very well known Chinese actress in the film as well, playing one of the pilots or something. But
and then Pacific Rim, which generally kind of tanked, it did well over there. That's the reason why we're getting a John Boyega sequel. It's interesting. They like their. They like their big machines. we also actually started watching, where Shay started and I piggybacked in on a Netflix show called Winona Earp. And it's a modern day continuation of the tales of Wyatt Earp, told through a supernatural lens.
Right.
In that Wyatt Earp has a special gun called the Peacemaker, and it can send demons back to hell. And every generation of the Earps there's a curse on them, and they have to kill these 77 demons, or the curse will repeat. And so far, no one has done it, and they're on the great great granddaughter Winona Earp. And it's like, okay.
Is it anywhere near as ridiculous as it sounds?
No, it's not as bad as it sounds, and it's a lot of cliches, but it's kind of well acted. It's got okay production value. It's not bad. It's not bad. I'm just seeing how it develops. Not really got me yet, but I'm curious, and I'm just basically waiting until Stranger Things season 2.
So are we invoking the brain dead rule?
Yeah.
It's the stupidest idea for a TV show I've ever heard, but it's fucking good.
Yeah, I cannot wait. Speaking of, can't wait, the short Stan season of Philip K. Dick.
Yes, that could be worth watching. Steve Buscemi's involved, I believe.
They've got quite a few people involved, actually.
With Blade Runner coming out later in the year, it's a good time to be a Philip K. Dick fan.
World Jones Made. That's mine. I'm making it.
At least it gives you an opportunity. Get that script out of storage.
Yes, I will do that.
Start shopping it around. I had a bit of an interesting night last night. I was bored after the football ended. But it was a very exciting football game. I went extra time, and there was a goal kicked after the siren to win the match for the West Coast Eagles. For all our football fans,
I thought you were talking about the Essendon match where they got
roused. They got their pants pulled down. That was boring as shit. No, the actual football was good, but when it finished, I got to thinking about a film I watched a while ago, which I really enjoyed, called Miracle Mile. It's an 80s film.
Oh, yeah.
About nuclear war.
Yeah.
I thought, I'll see if I can find it. And I tried to find it, and I ended up finding a list of 80s cult films. And number 25 on that list was a film called Night of a Comet. And it's come up in some of the books I've been reading recently. It was, I can't remember which book it was, but it actually referenced Night of a Comet. And I was like, oh, okay, I have to get around to watching it. And so I thought, well, here we go. This is the universe telling me tonight's tonight. So
yeah,
it is available in its entirety on the YouTubes.
Okay.
I did not upload it. So the rights holders have a problem. Talk to the YouTube people.
Yes.
Night of a Comet. I just have to read the plot synopsis to give you an idea.
Okay.
A comet wipes out most of life on Earth, leaving two valley girls fighting against cannibal zombies and a sinister group of scientists.
Well, that sounds like good family fun.
It does. It was every bit as stupid as that. It was absolutely stupid. Like, a comet comes in and it turns everyone into dust. And our main characters are sisters, Regina and Samantha. And they both manage to survive being turned into dust because they remain in rooms made of steel. Regina is our main protagonist. Spends the night in a projection booth, sleeping with a projectionist for some reason. There's even a point of exposition where he goes, "They built this place strong. The walls are made of steel." And anyway, they survive. It takes them a little while to figure out everyone's dead.
Right.
They decide to go to a radio station because it's what you do in the 80s.
Of course.
The film was made in 1984. And there they meet another survivor, Hector Gomez, played brilliantly by a very young Robert Beltran. Does that name mean anything to you?
No.
No, and it shouldn't, but I tell you what, his face will, if you're anything like me. Instantly, you go, "That face, hang on a second, I know that voice."
Oh!
He played Chakotay in Star Trek Voyager for 7 seasons. And I'm like, as soon as I heard that voice, that guy was on Star Trek!
Okay.
And I got excited for about 5 minutes. And went, he was so young! So this is a good 10, 11 years before they started Voyager. Voyager was 95, so 11 years before Voyager. And yeah, he's not a very good actor in this. He plays sort of a street thug or a truck driver. I don't know. I wasn't paying attention. It was late. There were scientists involved who have like an underground bunker, and they waited out the comet, and they're going out and abducting survivors to make a blood serum to help them survive because they are exposed to the comet somehow. And it was, you can feel the George Romero influence.
Okay.
Very heavily there. Like, yeah. There's a part where they visit a shopping centre.
Yeah.
And there's a shootout in the shopping centre between them and people.
Okay.
Who work there, I guess.
Yeah.
And that is, of course, you can't... End of a world. You visit a shopping mall. There are zombies involved in the film.
Mm.
Though I only remember seeing two zombies. I'm pretty sure it was the same guy both times.
Mm-hmm.
It's Dawn of the Dead. You know,
very
heavily influenced by Romero. If you like cheese,
yeah,
this is very, very cheesy 80s stuff. I would love to see the guys from MST3K have a go at it.
Cool.
Yeah,
we should come up with a list of potentials for MST3K.
Maybe they can't get the rights to it. I don't know. But you know, have you watched any of the new MST3K?
We talked about it.
We didn't talk about it on air though.
I think we did.
Did we? I'm pretty sure it came out after we finished up last year.
No, I think we talked about it last week.
Did we?
Or week before.
Well, we won't talk about it again.
But, I really loved it, especially the fact that...
Oh, you mentioned you loved the way that Pat Oswalt was in it. Yeah. Hopefully we get a second season out of it.
Hope
because it's good to have that kind of comedy, even though It's more fun to watch with friends. So yes, if you're a fan of that kind of thing. Or here in Melbourne, of course, there is the Cinema Fiasco shows that go on, which is, yes, sort of somewhat influenced by the MST3K sort of phenomenon. Have you watched anything interesting on telly apart from what went on Earth?
No, not really.
I picked up a bit of an old show this week.
Okay.
I came out and I caught the wrong word.
Yeah.
Found Tree watching Dexter.
See, that started really well.
Never really got into it. Like, I didn't actually ever go out of my way to watch it. Like, I watched bits of it with Trudy. I'm like, this is really boring. But that's probably maybe got something to do with the fact that I didn't watch it from the start. And I vaguely understand the concept of what Dexter is, a serial killer who kills serial killers, essentially.
Yeah.
So it's like a Robin Hood of serial killers.
Yeah.
But it was never very interesting to me. But maybe if it's just the first season, four or five episodes in, I'm like, well, this is much better if you sit down and watch it from the start.
Yeah.
Rather than jumping in the middle somewhere.
Yeah. Because they try to expand a lot of the other characters and they introduce a couple of new ones. And it's like, no. And then they try to do so much weird stuff with Dexter. It's kind of, you should have just left it alone. But
I guess sometimes they come to you and they go, can you please make another season of this? And you're out of ideas.
Mm.
You go, but what if we had, like, his wacky cousin from a foreign country move in with Dexter? Could be, like, Perfect Strangers.
It's like, he needs a flamboyantly gay housemate.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of that time, that era of TV, did you ever watch Burn Notice?
No.
That is an interesting film. It's a spy recently disavowed by the US government, uses his special op training to help others in trouble. It's basically
like the A-Team.
It's kind of like the A-Team, but he is not allowed to leave a particular area, and at the same time, he's trying to work out why he was burnt as an agent and get back into the industry. Jeffrey Donovan, Bruce Campbell as Sam Axe, and it was part of Bruce Campbell's resurgence because he was fantastic at Sam Axe, and Gabriel Anwar, who is Jeffrey Donovan's show girlfriend, who is also a former member of the IRA bomb team, which is it's a very fun, very silly, go in thinking A team, and you could very well enjoy it. But should we take a quick break there? And then
sure,
when we come back, we can talk about... We actually have a question from the community.
Uh-huh.
Mr. Richard Dowson has some questions about Doctor Who.
I will also... We'll report back as per regular listeners again. We'll note that I did talk about playing Catwoman
in
the game. I have actually successfully played Catwoman again.
Mm-hmm.
I will be not got as far as I'd like, but we'll talk some more about that in a bit.
And we've also got the... I'm presuming you actually ended up listening to the new album. The band name
Queens
of the Stone Age. Yes, that's it. Thank you. And I tried to watch the Jack Horseman. So stick around. And we are back after kangaroo burger. Well, it's a kangaroo sandwich.
No kangaroos were harmed in the making of his burger.
They were already dead.
Exactly.
So, as previously teased before the break, just got a customer. Well, I say customer, bloody retail
customer.
A fan from the community, Mr. Richard Dowson. He's quite a regular listener of the show. He wants us to talk about Jodie Whittaker being cast as the first official female, I was going to say James Bond, Doctor Who.
That's a good point, because it was controversial. There was a little, you know, the usual dickheads came out of the cupboard and said it was, you know, political correctness gone mad or whatever. But, I mean, it's an interesting direction to take the character in. And so it should have been no surprise, because it was telegraphed that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
There was talk that Tilda Swinton may have taken a role.
Yeah.
Which would have been very cool, but I think she's a little busy with her Hollywood stuff.
Yeah.
But I have very little idea about who Jodie Whittaker is.
Well, you watched Attack the Block?
Yes, that was
good.
She's
in that.
But a while ago, so it was John
Boyega. She's the woman in that. Yes.
Well, look, I mean, I'm not a huge Doctor Who fan.
Neither am I.
I haven't watched much of a new Doctor Who at all. So this includes from David Tennant and Matt Smith to Peter Capaldi. I haven't watched any of it. It's too well made. Like, give me the rubber guy in a rubber suit and they're in the same corridor three times with a camera moving to the other end to make it look like it's a big spaceship or something. Like, you have a cellophane stars and that's what I want from my Doctor Who. I want terrible special effects. But I did watch an episode a few years ago that had Carey Mulligan in it. Now, that was interesting.
Ah, yes, that was a David Tennant one. Blink.
But was, I think was that may have been in the introduction of a Weeping Angel.
Yes.
Which are a very cool new film. I'll pay that. But it's hard to get emotionally invested in a decision, about a casting decision about a show that I don't watch.
Mm.
Other than to say, I think it's a cool idea.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, maybe you take the Doctor in different directions. Does it mean the Doctor traditionally has always had female companions?
Maybe a male.
Maybe you have a male companion. Yeah. I mean, he's had male companions as well.
Yes.
But maybe they'll be more like that. Will there be, I don't know, like, I don't recall there being terribly many romantic angles between the Doctor and his companions in the past.
Well, between Billy Piper and Chris Eccleston / David Tennant, they really played up the romance angle, and there was, for a little while, a little bit of the romance angle between Karen Gillan and Matt Smith. But apart from that, it's kind of not original. I think if they really wanted to kind of say fuck you to all the naysayers, they just go, okay, female Doctor Who, female companion, lesbian relationship.
That'd keep everyone happy.
Yeah.
But yeah, like in the, you know, we've talked about maybe the next, another who could be someone, you know, of colour, you know, someone of non-white, you know, origins, yeah. Like an Idris Elba.
Mm.
Yeah, obviously a big star now, probably very unlikely to happen, but, you know, someone of that stature, he would.
Yeah.
We're talking of him actually being James Bond.
Yeah.
Of course, Daniel Craig is signed on for another film, so that decision's been kicked down the road, by which point Idris will probably be a little bit too old for the role. But,
yeah. But the idea has been postulated, and as long as the right person comes around, I don't think many people will really have a problem with it.
I remember when they were talking about it a couple of years ago, and there was a US conservative talk show, it was Rush Limbaugh, who, for those of you who know that, is, you know, a nut, right-wing nut, who interestingly this week was saying that Hurricane Iris was liberal propaganda.
Oh wow, not then, really happening.
It was liberal propaganda, and then he has, in the last 24 hours, evacuated his Florida home. So what ironic.
That's just too much propaganda!
But he actually came out, I remember him getting a bit shirty about that and saying, no, James Bond is white. Why are they talking about, you know, why are they, you know, casting a black actor? And you're like, you do realise he's not a real person.
No, I'm never, sorry, I've seen him on the television.
Never was a real person. There never was a James Bond, as much as Ian Fleming might have liked to have pictured himself as being James Bond. He wasn't a real person. So
no.
We can do whatever the fuck we want to them. Yes. We can make them women, make them black, white, Asian, Middle Eastern. Fuck off, who cares, you know? So I think I'm back on topic for Richard.
Yeah.
Good luck to it. I hope the Doctor Who fans get behind it, and I hope she's everything you want in your next Doctor Who. I think it opens up interesting new story angles.
Yeah. I think she's a really, really good actor. She's been in Broadchurch, which is an interesting connection to David Tennant. She's got quite a quite an eclectic resume. You know, she's going to be the Doctor. She's been in a hospital drama series, she's been in Broadchurch, she's been in some comedies, she's been in real serious drama. So she's definitely got the potential for a very big range. And I think that Peter Capaldi seasons kind of hit a bit of a bum note for a lot of Doctor Who fans. It was possibly a little bit too crotchety or something like that. So maybe bringing in, you know, 35-year-old Doctor Who. It's not the youngest that Doctor Who has ever been. That's still owned by Matt Smith. But the first female is certainly going to bring a whole new perspective to it. And
she was in an episode of Black Mirror.
Yes, she was. I can't remember which one,
though. I'm instantly more interested in her automatically by that. Yeah, look, if she, I recall her in Attack the Block now that you mention it. I like her in that.
Yeah.
I like that film. Good luck to her. It's I like that the BBC keeps it fresh.
Yeah.
Unlike a James Bond character where, like, I guess it's a film, where you make one film every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, it's basically just kind of, with Bond, they're kind of just reskinning the same character. They never really do too much with it. Whereas with Doctor Who, they've all got very different personalities, and that's quite a nice thing of the Doctor. But yeah, Richard, I hope we have successfully talked about that. We talked about it far longer than I demand. But moving swiftly along and forgetting Doctor Who even exists, Travis, you have been purposefully playing some terrible computer games.
Oh, one of them was purposely terrible. We talked last week about Catwoman.
Mm.
I don't know how we got onto the topic, but we talked about that video game.
All things revolve around
the traditional idea that video games based on movies suck.
Mm.
Notable exception being GoldenEye 64.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And there are a couple others out there, I'm sure.
And the thing with GoldenEye, it came out like 2 years after the movie.
Yeah.
So it's kind of,
whatever. And a completely forgettable Bond for movie, sort of genre defining.
You mean you don't remember Alec Trevelyan
and
Xenia Onathop?
Terry Hatch was in that one, I think.
No. She was in
Tomorrow Never Dies.
Tomorrow Never Dies with Jonathan Pryce as the bad guy.
That was the one who was playing Rupert Murdoch, essentially.
Basically, yes.
But anyway, forgettable Bond film, great game. But so we're talking about, but traditionally, the video game sort of that goes with the movie sucks.
Yeah.
And so we thought, well, Catwoman really sucked. How bad could the game suck?
Yeah.
So I have managed to play a little bit of it. I did talk about streaming it on Twitch. I haven't been able to play it well enough just yet to get it up on Twitch. But hopefully I can get sued for saying this, but I had to download an emulator to play it on my computer.
Mm-hmm.
I tried the PS2 emulator, couldn't get that to work. You need an actual PS3 to get it to work.
Hence why the emulator.
Yes.
Oh, actually, you know, the physical copy of Catwoman on PlayStation 2 is probably worth
50 cents.
I was going to say about $1.50, but
I mean, you don't need a copy of a game; you need an actual PS2 to copy the BIOS.
Yeah, you can get a PS2 for like $50.
Yeah. Anyway, I didn't really want to buy a PS2. It actually happened in the cupboard somewhere. So I downloaded a GameCube emulator of all things because this was released on a wonderful Nintendo GameCube.
Lots of fucking GameCube.
And so I needed to download the game, the emulator, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to watch the opening cutscene, which is pretty awful.
Yep.
And then I got to try and foil a jewel heist in motion. instantly I can say with this game, whoever invented this game was a sad individual who likes hurting people. The camera control fucking sucks. The movement is... I'm going to put an asterisk in the review right now and go, this game is extraordinarily difficult to control on a keyboard. Like, nigh on impossible to control on a keyboard. I'm going to try it with a controller and see if that gets any easier, if I can get a controller to work.
Yep.
But, yeah, it's... I can instantly tell you that the camera control sucks and the movement sucks, but I actually haven't been able to get past the first fight, which I guess is supposed to be a tutorial, simply because I can't figure out how to do the things the game wants me to do on a keyboard. So stay tuned in that one, guys. I'm making some further efforts to get Catwoman the game up and running. But I do like your health bar is full of sparkly glitter, kind of.
Oh, now that just epitomizes Catwoman to me. You know,
it's like diamonds or
something. Sparkly glows. Oh, that would make sense. That would make sense. I would just like to point out something about the reception of Catwoman, the computer game. On Wikipedia, it says Catwoman received mixed to negative reviews from critics on home consoles due to problems including bad camera control, poor voice work, and an oversimplistic combat system. However, the Game Boy Advance version received mixed to positive reviews with aggregated review scores on Metacritic. It's the version 61 out of 100. The GameCube version ranked at 47 out of 100. PC 46, Xbox 45, and the PlayStation 2 at 47.57. So you are actually playing the best version of the game.
maybe I should go out and see if I can get an Xbox emulator and try that. But I'll keep going, guys. I'll try and come back to you with some more thoughts. I know everyone's very keen to... Should I pick up a vintage copy of...
Yeah, a 13-year-old game.
And maybe I need to buy a 13-year-old console to play it on as well. But I did pick up a game as well today, which I thought I'd quickly mention. We were talking a little earlier during our dinner break about a cartoon that I particularly loved when I was a child called The Mysterious Cities of Gold, which was set in South America, and a group of children who were stowaways on Spanish galleons to the New World get in adventures.
Oh, childish hiking.
There are conquistadors not doing all the nasty things that real conquistadors did, and it basically turns into Astro Boy by the end with like lasers and spaceships and stuff.
Well, they were very advanced.
It was very cool. It was a very cool cartoon. I loved it. Very odd. It was like a Japanese-French co-production, but it was in English or something. For years, it's been off the air. I think it's back actually on free-to-air TV now.
Yeah, the series was originally broadcast in Japan, and the French version, edited to have different characterization and music, was subsequently redubbed and distributed to many different countries throughout the world. Yeah.
It's classic 80s kids TV. But it came up on my Facebook memories recently that I had thought about backing a video game version on Kickstarter. I don't think I actually ever did back it. But it's not unusual for me to back something on Kickstarter and then forget about it 2 years later when the game's actually released.
Well, many of the Kickstarter games don't end up getting released.
Pride of the 13th I backed on Kickstarter, but that got released.
Yeah, that's true.
But this one did get released, actually. So I actually clicked on the link for the Kickstarter, and I realised it did actually reach its target at the time. I found it on Steam, and it was $11. I thought, what the hell? I spent about an hour playing it this afternoon. I was initially very pleased to find that the opening game, so the screen of the game, actually has the song from the cartoon, which I encourage everybody to Google Mysterious Cities of Gold or look it up on YouTube. You can find the song on there. It's very catchy. But getting into the game, the art style is very good. The characters look perfect, as they would have in the cartoon. But the game opens and you're in China. Now, it's been a very long time since I watched the TV show, because I was very...
I'm just going to read the plot here, just because I'm sure there's mention of China. In 1532, a Spanish orphan named Esteban joins Mendoza, a navigator, and his associates, Sancho and Pedro, not stereotypes there at all, in their search for one of the seven cities of gold in the New World. Yeah, I'm just scanning through. They do possibly find Atlantis.
Yes, remember the Atlantis angle.
Cryogenics. Yes, yes. Kings, Great Legacy, City of Gold, Volcanism. No, nothing about China.
So, for some reason, the game starts in China. Not that you fucking know it, but and it's basically a puzzle game. And it operates a little bit like what I expect. I've seen some of the Nintendo 3DS games sort of work. So,
In what way?
There's no voiceovers. There's no voice acting. You move a character on the screen by clicking their mouse where you'd like them to go.
Okay.
And you have to switch between three characters to actually do stuff. And then when you come up against something that's interesting that your game wants you to pay attention to, we sort of have silhouettes of Mendoza and the children having a conversation slide in from left and right on the screen.
Okay.
And there'll be like a text going, oh, Mendoza, oh, children, well, maybe you can do this and it'll work. And, you know, the children, oh, yeah, thanks, Mendoza, we'll try that. So it reminds me, I think, of some Japanese games I've seen and some of the stuff I think I recall seeing on the 3DS, the flippy ones, the Nintendo. God, I can't remember what they're called. DS, Nintendo DS.
The DS, yeah. 3DS, yeah.
I don't like puzzle games, as a rule. I think I've talked before, when I get to the puzzles in Skyrim.
Mm. Oh, yes.
I can't be like, we're moving you've played a little bit of Skyrim? Or no?
No, none. I am waiting until
it
comes out on Switch.
Free weekend on Xbox.
I'm getting Skyrim on Switch.
Okay. How long? They want to get it along. It was supposed to be, they were advertising the bloody thing on their ads, but you'll love it when you do. There are puzzles where you got to move, like, you know, pillars and stuff to get the door open, and you know, I usually just can't be arsed trying to figure it out. I just Google the answer.
Yeah. Get back to the story.
Hate puzzles. So, but I didn't get, in an hour of gameplay on Mysterious Cities of Gold, there are many puzzles I didn't get even remotely frustrated once. Like, which is probably not a good... It's probably a sign that the puzzles are ridiculously easy. Like, ridiculously easy. I kind of wonder if this game is supposed to be for children. Like, they're that easy.
Mm-hmm.
And I got kind of bored. I turned it off. I'm actually thinking about returning it before I play for 2 hours.
You can return stuff on Steam.
You can return stuff on Steam. If you play for less than 2 hours... They have to abide by Australian consumer law.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sure there were people lining up for my opinion on the Mysterious Cities of Gold video game an hour, and I would say give it a miss. Unless it's on TV. The cartoon is on NITV here on free-to-air telly. So, if your kids are watching it and they really, really like it, maybe they might enjoy this game more than I did.
Yeah, well, apparently, there's three new seasons, 26 episodes each, are in production.
Picking up on the storyline where the 1982 series left off.
You can't go home again, you know?
No.
And so, you watched the opening credit sequence during our break, and you said the animation is really shitty.
Yeah.
And it's a little bit like when I go back and I watch He-Man now. When I was a kid, I fucking loved the shit out of He-Man. No. And now I watch back and you go, wow, that animation's fucking cheap and terrible.
Yeah.
And it's really kind of homoerotic. I don't know. Look, if kids today get into it, fantastic. I just don't see, I don't see myself being keen on it. I mean, it served its market at the time, and that's why I liked about being a kid when we were young. I kind of feel like cartoons were better. I mean, you got weird shit like this.
Yeah,
you know, like you got a kid in South America working with Inca and stuff. I mean, give me
22 years ago, we had the release of Pinky and the Brain.
I'm going to have to hurt you now.
Mm-hmm.
So that is a show I think you can get a little bit more about as an adult. When you go and watch it and you realise that Brain, the guy doing the voice of Brain, is basically doing an Orson Welles impersonation.
Yeah.
And you would no way get that as a child.
Yes. Nah. But the great thing about Pinky and the Brain, it kind of goes back to what we were talking about with the movie Michael from the serial killer's point of view. There is actually an episode of Pinky and the Brain from Pinky's point of view, and you see his thought process and how he gets from, do you know what I'm thinking, Pinky? And it just kind of flashes to him going through it. They're like, I don't know, man. Why would we need elephants on the tricycle? It actually makes sense in a very weird, twisted way. And it's a freaking amazing episode. Really good. So definitely check that out, people.
If you haven't already, they're not making it anymore, are they?
No, but apparently the Animaniacs are rumoured to be coming back.
Wow.
With Rob Paulson coming back.
They have no more original ideas, so, I mean, coming out, I think, this week is the Emoji film.
Yeah, that bombed in America already.
I think our new special guest co-host should have to report back on that.
I think so. Which one? Because we've got a second one kind of hanging in the wings.
May
be available next week.
He probably dodges the bullet here because he hasn't actually been on the show yet.
That's true.
I think...
But there was also actually a new...
The Hamster movie with Tara Reid.
Yes, Dean Cain and Tara Reid. Seems like a talking hamster movie.
The thing I would say, though, is that the Dread Captain, the Dread Pirate Eric... the people who joined us last week would have met. He tries to be the kind of man who enjoys things in their purest form. And I think we should do him the honour of assigning him a film that he can enjoy in a full big screen experience with surround sound with a group of people he doesn't know in the theatre. I just don't see the talking hamster film with Dean Cain getting a cinema release here.
Ye of little faith.
But you know, I know the Emoji movie's coming out because I had the posters up at the cinema the other day.
Oh, see, now.
Patrick Stewart plays the Pooh.
That is possibly the best sentence you've ever said. Patrick Stewart plays the Pooh.
Speaking of poo, did you see the stories this week about the girl on a Tinder date who tried to throw her poo out the window and got stuck?
No.
Oh, this happened, and I just see, other than my idea last week for the TV show where Johnny Cab solved crimes,
which is fantastic.
I think Mr. Furry the Pooh at the Window affair could be the next big thing. I mean, if they're making movies out of emojis, they make movies of anything now. You can Google it once we finished. It happened. And it was in your beloved former homeland.
It was never beloved. And I'm not surprised. I'm guessing possibly Hackney.
They're cool. English suburbs that go in one ear and out your room. It wasn't Cockfosters, I know that much.
Yeah, that's one that sticks in the mind and the anus. Anyway, moving along. Do you want to talk a little bit about Queens of the Stone Age album?
Yes, I can talk about Queens of the Stone Age.
Yeah.
The new album has been out for a little while now. I think it came out late August.
Okay.
It is called Villains, which is the seventh studio album by Queens of the Stone Age. I just know that because Wikipedia told me.
You should have. No one would have known, man.
Well, I mean, I have some of their records, but I don't have all of them, I don't think.
Mm.
So it was a little bit like, oh, how many have they got now? So.
Mm.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Actually, I do have more. So this is their first one for about 3 or 4 years, and it's really fucking good.
It's not bad.
I like it, especially like the first song on the album. Don't Fail Me Now.
Pete, Don't Fail Me.
Yeah, and it's a really catchy tune.
Yeah, I couldn't help but after listening to the whole thing, really sounds like they were kind of. Really hoping they could get David Bowie to be the lead singer on them, because it kind of sounds like something that he would lend his vocals to. It sounds kind of like him. It's like, okay, this is good. It doesn't really sound like Queens of the Stone Age to me in vocals, in the beats and the music itself. Yes, but the vocals just. Sound kind of foreign, and I kept on getting flashbacks of Labyrinth.
I'm going to listen to it in a completely different light now.
I've just ruined the album.
Not at all. I'm open to hearing a different perspective on it. I mean, I straight away noticed that's Josh Homme's voice, and that's very distinctive rock and roll voice. It just sounds like a fairly standard. I'm making it sound like I just said I liked it. I'm going to say it sounds like a fairly standard Queens of a Stone Age album. It don't mean anything like a bad way. They do what they do really well.
No, yeah, absolutely. And, it's definitely his voice. I mean, from his early stuff all the way through, he's got quite a distinct voice. But just listening to it, to me, it sounded like an homage to David Bowie.
Potentially, they were listening to a lot of Bowie. I mean, I don't want to draw a long bow here, but the last time they were in Australia, they toured with Nine Inch Nails.
Okay.
They did co-headlining tours. Fucking cool. And they tossed the coin every night to see who would go on first.
Oh, cool.
The night I saw them in Melbourne, fortunately, Queens of the Stone Age went on first because, thanks to certain people, I was late. and I think you will know who some of these people are. I won't name them.
Is it someone who does the infamous, who's that guy?
No, she was one of them, but there are others. there were other conspirators, but so we learned about 20 minutes after Queens of the Stone Age started. Because they were first, I didn't mind quite so much. But I have seen Queens of the Stone Age a number of times. Maybe I don't know. Trent Reznor is always very well renowned for being a big Bowie fan. Toured with Bowie, recorded with him. To be a long bow, but maybe some of that influence rubbed off, because I've never really listened to Queens of the Stone Age and gone, that's a band who likes David Bowie.
Yeah, well, just listen to their stuff, you kind of get a lot of even the fact they had Dave Grohl drumming for them for a little period of time and things like that. It's kind of, they seem very open or receptive to external influences on their stuff, so maybe it's kind of them just kind of going, alright, an icon of the music industry has died. We can get a little bit of that flavour in, I'm sure.
I just googled Quatsa, David Bowie, and both the Guardian review and the Rolling Stone review both mentioned the David Bowie influence, so you're not alone there. Very good. You've been here for this, even though you've only seen Nickelback live twice.
Shut up. I've also seen Manic Street Preachers. They open for Nickelback, which is tragic because they're better than Nickelback.
I do like the Manic Street Preachers.
Yes.
But I think there's a Foo Fighters record coming out soon. Maybe we should have a listen to that and talk about it in the show, because
that'd be cool.
I got in trouble this week for calling him Dad Rock.
But it kind of is now.
Yeah, we're touring later in the year, for those who are interested. I mean, this probably won't be news to anybody by the time you hear this, but they're playing at Etihad Stadium, I think in December. And they will be playing with Weezer, a well-known band from the 90s. Which I'm...
Sweater song.
I don't think I would go see Weezer by himself. Because I don't know enough of their songs. But I mean, Buddy Holly. The great film, Happy Days. Yeah. Spike Jonze directed.
Okay.
But, yeah, so I mean, that's a great show, I guess, if you like that kind of thing. But I mean, I'm like... I'd be like...
I felt really old. I was on Apple Music and just sort of like... I just put in Best Rock and it's sort of like... Best Dad Rock Album.
Yeah.
And it had, like, Green Day and things like that. So I'm like, no, that's not... Oh, no, it kind of is Dad Rock now.
I guess so.
People who like that are dad age.
Well, I go back to my memory. I saw Green Day tour their American Idiot record in 2005 here in Australia. And they played Etihad Stadium as well, which it was called something else back then. The Dot Band Stadium.
Yeah.
And they were brilliant. One of the things I observed about the show was there was a guy there in his Dookie shirt that looked like it was an original Dookie shirt. And he was there quite obviously looked like he was with his son. And they were both rocking out.
Ah.
So his son would have been, you know, 11, 12 or something like that.
Yeah.
And so... Green Day have been Dad Rock for a while.
I mean, even their most recent album, Revolution Radio, it's actually really good. It's more Green Day, but it's good.
They do Green Day well. And I just saw them live on Facebook last week. They were doing a sort of mini concert live on Facebook to raise money for hurricane relief, which the Americans need quite a bit of at the moment. But yeah, so look, that's it. Maybe we'll talk about the Foo Fighters record when it comes out.
Yeah,
I don't think I'll be going to the concert.
No.
But
I feel like I really should just sort of like say to you, all right, book us some tickets, take me to a good show. I need to break my Nickelback.
Well, we can do that because to go on to some more local rock and roll news, one of my favourite bands and your fiancé's favourite bands, the Mammals, have reformed. I don't know, I expect anybody who listens to it. Do we have anybody who listens? Richard, you know, you're the one who listens to this shit.
there's Richard and there's Ken. We've got two loyal.
Mammal were a local rock band who were playing about 9 years ago. 9 years ago they finished up playing together. And I always really strongly felt that they had what it would take to get through to actually make it. If in Australia,
really,
got overseas.
Nine years ago
they broke up. Back end of 2008. And so they were actually broke up just after a tour of the UK.
it broke them.
We went
to Manchester and it was too much.
I think it was interpersonal problems in the band. And it was really disappointing because I really felt that they could break through and actually become a fairly well-known band.
Okay.
Quite successful. But they didn't. They broke up. They've gone off and done separate projects ever since of varying quality and success. But they have actually reformed. And they are playing a sold-out show here in Melbourne in October.
Okay.
Which I think your fiancé is going to.
Yes, she is.
You're not.
No, I'm not.
I happen to have the inside scoop. Having spoken to the lead singer of Mammal a couple of weeks ago at a concert for one of his other projects. Not only did this happen in 5 weeks, the whole reunion started and was finished in 5 weeks.
Wow.
And he called his... telling us the story, and he called his agent, who also looks after Silverchair and a few others, and basically told him, book us some shows. And they're going to be in the UK next year, in Europe. So they'll be... which is good for them.
Yeah.
Good for the people of Europe. Enjoy a great Australian rock group. But there will be shows later this year. Oh yes, there will be shows. And I believe it will be just before Christmas.
Well,
now I know you don't know anything about them. Shame might have made you listen to them. But that might be something we can do to get you along to your first... We've done your first VB.
Yep.
We've done your first Pie Floater.
Yep.
Now he needs you to get you to a pub rock show.
Okay.
And I know that the venue mm-hmm. where it will be a well-known Australian rock and Melbourne rock and roll institution. I shouldn't say where it is because I haven't actually announced the gig yet. So
look at this. Teases.
So, I mean, I don't want to get in trouble. I mean, I don't know if enough people listen to this podcast to get it out there. But you heard it here first. They will be playing in Melbourne again just before Christmas at an iconic Melbourne venue.
Excellent.
And I think we're going to have to get in literally spit to get your tickets because it sold out in about 2 days there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the fact that you're saying they're going to be going over to Europe and UK sounds like that the hunger for Mammal hasn't really died off in the 9 years.
The thing is that if you drove around Melbourne in 2007, 2008, it was not uncommon to see people who had a sticker on the back window of their car that was a whale's tail, which was one of the logos of Mammal. Or you'd see someone in the street wearing a shirt or a jumper. They were breaking through in the local pub scene here, so which is a traditional way of cracking the Australian rock and roll market is you play until your fucking legs fall off. Like, that's how all the great Australian bands got started. Your AC/DCs, your Cold Chisels, Powderfinger, they played, they drove up and back this country in a Tarago. Mammal had broken through, at least in Melbourne. And so I figured, you know, this is the kind of band and their music they were creating were 4 minute rock and roll songs, so the kind of stuff that could be played on radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, cool. Breakthrough in a market where, you know, maybe you're a little bit too political, but who knows? It might have worked in the UK and Europe. There's a band I know, in a local band called Airborne, who are basically an AC/DC cover band who play originals.
Oh, yeah.
It makes no sense at all. but that's what they are. They sound exactly like AC/DC, except they play their own songs. And they're from Warrnambool, but they're never here now. But you see, but you watch them on their Facebook page. Spend most of their year in Europe now, playing festivals and shows in Europe. They're not household names here, but they make a fairly comfortable living, just playing great rock and roll in Europe. So maybe Mammal will follow a well-trod path by then. So maybe so there's a couple of things to look forward to. We'll make sure we take some photos if that actually gets off the ground, and we'll talk Foo Fighters when that record gets released.
Now I'd like to possibly finish off, unless you have any final thoughts, with I said that I would watch through Bojack Horseman. I tried.
This isn't a sound like you didn't like it.
I didn't think it was that funny.
What is wrong with you?
I didn't think it was that funny.
So good.
I've watched 3 or 4 maybe episodes. I watched them back to back to try and kind of keep the flow going and get used to it. No. It wasn't gelling with me, man.
Keep going.
You want me to keep going?
It's really fucking good.
All right, well, if I'm going to keep going with this, you need to experience something in return.
I was going to watch the OA, wasn't I?
You were going to watch the OA, but I'm going to let you watch something else instead. And it is celebrating an anniversary as well. I think it's 11 years since it first premiered. Fringe.
Yeah, I watched the first episode of that once. It was on a plane. It was a virus or something, and then it got weird.
Yeah.
And it was like it was trying to be the X-Files, but no.
Bit different.
But no near as charismatic or interesting. Okay, is it on a streaming service?
I have got all of it. So you will be able to get it easily. Do not fear.
Okay. I will give Fringe a go.
You can try watching Fringe, and I will continue trying to watch Bojack Horseman. Because I know that I am in the minority on not particularly liking Bojack Horseman. So I feel like it's probably me. But, yeah, I'm just giving you the Bojack update.
Okay. Give it another 3 or 4 episodes next week. I honestly can't. It's funny. I don't know.
I'll try. But on that note, I think, unless there's anything else, I think we'll wrap up.
I think we'll wrap up.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to the Armchair Producers. Each and every week, we are going to try and come to you with random shit, frankly. You know, inane babble. All that sort of stuff. Please feel free to contact us with your suggestions for the show, comments on anything else.
Like death threats.
Yeah, death threats are always, as long as they're entertaining.
Preferably.
Yeah. But
we'll get them on air if they are.
Yeah.
You can just leave comments in Fried Brain Productions group on Facebook. You can follow me on Twitter at The Fried Brain. It's easy to follow along and be involved.
I mean,
reach out.
You know, I just like to give a shout out before we finish up to a really close friend of ours who's having a really hard time at the moment. He's going through some real heavy shit.
He may or may not have said a few things that might have been a little bit socially inappropriate.
But that's what he does.
He tells the hard truth.
He does, and that's why people love him. That's why we love him here at the show. And this goes out to Kirk.
Kirk Cameron.
Friend of the show, evangelist, you know, just all-around top bloke who said that the Hurricanes were God's wrath for...
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
lesbians or something.
Incidentally, he was wearing one of our t-shirts as he said it.
He was. try and prove that's not true. You bet you can't. we just tweeted him before the show started, just lending our support and letting him know that, you know, maybe it's his podcast that's actually the true sign of the apocalypse as opposed to hurricanes. And
exactly. He might have just got hurricane podcast. Those are two easy words.
It's an understandable mistake to make. Look, Kurt hasn't tweeted back. Ever, but you know, he's a busy guy.
There's an open mic for him anytime.
Anytime
he wants to
there's a seat, there's a spare fold out bed in my spare room.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk is always welcome in my home.
Mm-hmm.
Wife Candace, especially. Giggity. Because I remember Full House.
See, I just refuse to watch this.
So, you know, we're thinking of you, Kirk. We'll tweet you again. Shortly, I'm sure.
Repeatedly.
And so, on that note, should we say goodnight to everybody, including Kirk?
Good night, everyone, including Kirk.
Good night.